Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. It is 10 minutes after 12 o'clock here, a Friday afternoon, the weekend dead ahead. Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune is in the studio. He comes by a couple, I should say, welcome to the business lunch.
Thank you very much.
Scott comes by a couple of times a week to talk about social media issues in the Tribune. And, we'll do that. But Scott and I were having fun off the air talking about things we might have heard in the debate. it's just, you know, the thing is that I just said people are now dissecting the trees of the debate. Just look at the forest.
Yep.
Don't bother with the trees. Look what we were talking about last night.
Yep.
It's a remarkable thing, and we'll revisit that. But Kleinberg he didn't set out to do that, but he's going to kind of preview the rest of the show today. And we'll start with the Zika virus and Google. Google coming up with $1 million to help UNICEF fight the Zika virus. Now, a little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking to Carolyn Stern, who's the president of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. She happens to be in town today, and she's quoted in some of the articles I read about that. But tell me about Google and what they're doing here.
Yeah. This is really amazing, because it's one thing to donate $1 million to a cause, which is wonderful to begin with, but Google has its own engineers that are actually helping UNICEF analyze data. They're mapping the virus. They're doing all kinds of things. They're making it so their search engines are smarter when people look up what Zika virus is, and it's operating in like 16 different languages, so no matter where you are, you can get the latest information.
Okay, so what does that mean? So I know that they talked about tracking the flu here by Google searches and things like that.
Right.
Is that what we're talking about?
That's part of it, but Google has been on this kick lately where everything is instantaneous. So you can go to google.com and search and, you know, find all kinds of links. They're trying to make it so when you search for something, the thing that pops up immediately at the top above all the search results, the thing that you don't have to click on, where you get an actual paragraph and you can actually be done within a few seconds.
Oh, sure.
That's what this is. So you'll get information, I guess, depending on where you are, the way this is described. You know, if you're in an area infected by it in a bigger way, you know, you might get more data and more information in the language where you are.
So what the engineers are doing at Google maybe is making information more readily available to all of us. They're not necessarily helping in the search for some sort of cure or vaccination or any of that.
Well, I think they're actually doing both. I think the big part of it is the engineering stuff, but they're also helping people map where it is, where it's going, where it's been, which all could lead to a cure someday. So,
well,
yeah,
cool.
I think it's both.
We'll certainly ask Carol about that when she comes by.
Great.
Also, later in the program is Dr. Emma Sapella. She's the science director at Stanford University and has written a book called The Happiness Track, How to Apply the Science of Happiness to Accelerate Your Success. So, in other words, that, you know, the things we're taught as kids, you know, study harder, don't take a break, do this stuff, you know, stop daydreaming, really wires us in a way that is counterproductive when it comes to creativity and success down the road.
Sure.
All of that to say, there's a study out about Facebook and how happy the little Facebook workers are.
Yeah. 96% of employees say that they are happy working there. And 96, I mean, that's a pretty amazing number. And 44% say that they have the lowest amount of stress.
Yeah.
And,
well, you know why that is, right? Because when their boss walks by, they don't have to hide Facebook like the rest of us do at work.
But what happens if they're on Twitter? I mean,
that's a whole different problem. Right. That would be a whole different problem. Right. Okay, so, but, and I know that the articles surely point to all the benefits these people get, right? Because benefits at Facebook are pretty outrageous.
Yeah, and the thing that's so crazy, I mean, there's like things like free lunch and free snacks and beer and game tables.
And healthcare, right?
And healthcare and extended healthcare. And the thing that's crazy is when you think of these tech companies, these things are normal. It's like when I read that, it's like, oh, free beer, free food. Of course, they all have that. But it's all a big giant competition. The tech companies, Apple, Facebook, Twitter, all of them, they're all competing with each other for these benefits. I have actually seen people in forums and job forums say, well, I'm much more interested in this company because they offer this perk.
Really?
They're not even talking about necessarily the job per se. They are thinking, I have these different places that I can work. I want to work at the one that offers the free buffet at 5 p.m. every night or whatever it is.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because what I was going to bring up was, no matter what those benefits are, you know, they tend to become, I don't want to say expected, but they tend to be maybe taken for granted. You know, you can still become pretty blue at work, surrounded by free Doritos and guacamole. So I was going to say that the 96% probably speaks more toward a corporate attitude than it does ping pong tables.
Yes, I'm sure it does. But these are surveys that people are filling out.
Yeah,
you know,
no, I don't doubt it.
And but just to get that kind of number. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it has to extend into the whole entire culture when you have that type of thing.
I know that we've talked on this program about businesses that now are paying the student loans for younger workers in an effort to keep them, which is, I think, a great program. And
yeah,
I hope my kids find a job there, wherever that is. All right. Tell me about every time I, you know, get ready to talk to you, it seems like a couple things come up. Well, Snapchat, but yep. We're not going to hit that today. But Messenger is always on the table and Spotify is always on the table.
Yep.
And today they're married a little bit.
They're married a little bit where you can now interact directly in Spotify through Messenger. So when you're in Messenger, and now when you're using the Messenger app, not the chat in Facebook, but when you're in the Messenger app, there's a little menu at the bottom. They call it more, but it says dot, 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 and there's a whole bunch of things under there. And now Spotify is under there, and it lets you go directly into Spotify and find a song and then share it with someone in the chat. You can't go into the chat and play music yet, but my guess is that's just a matter of time before that happens.
So you can't use Messenger, you can't play music from Messenger.
Correct. You can't as of right now. But my guess is you'll be able to not only do that at some point, I'll be able to be messaging you and you'll say, you know what song I really like? And we'll play it at the same time and listen to it at the same time. And then we could possibly critique the lyrics and there's all kinds of things we could do.
It's like making mixtapes for someone without the tape part.
It totally is. And it just goes to show you how powerful Messenger is going to eventually be and how powerful they want it to be, where all these apps will live inside of it.
I know. You keep telling me that. another thing, virtual reality is all over the world, and it's the big thing. And so let's go to Sweden. It's Sweden, right?
Let's go
to Sweden, where now I don't understand this one at all. McDonald's has created their Happy Meal box in a way that can be transformed into a virtual reality headset?
Yep. There are companies now that are doing that. Like Google has Google Cardboard, and the New York Times is testing that kind of stuff out. But this is actually, it's a Happy Meal box that you cut out and you look through it, and it gives you this virtual reality game that they've put into it. It doesn't come with your phone. You have to actually put your phone into it because you're looking through the phone, through the box.
I see.
And it creates the experience. But just the fact that McDonald's, and this is only Sweden, unfortunately, but McDonald's Happy Meal toys going from what they've gone to a virtual reality headset that lets kids get better at downhill skiing is phenomenal development.
Certainly not a choking hazard, right?
That's for sure.
One of the issues that McDonald's had with some of their toys earlier. Okay, so is this going to come to the United States?
Doesn't say that it's going to happen now. This is for a 30th anniversary for Happy Meal. I would be very surprised if they didn't expand this beyond Sweden. Right. This could just be a situation where they're testing it there. But
will we soon be able to buy Happy Meals through our Messenger app?
That would not surprise me one bit. And if it does come here, I will absolutely buy this Happy Meal.
Scott Kleinberg writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming in today, Scott.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Tom Gimbel about having an uncomfortable conversation with one of your workers. That's next on the Business Lunch. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here on this Friday afternoon. Tom Gimbel is on a phone line. Tom is the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network and a frequent guest on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Tom, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Steve. Missed you last week.
I heard you filled in admirably, though, so I think everything was probably just fine.
I got more airtime with you going. I don't know what's going on here.
Who knows? You might have more chances in the future. speaking of that, you know, I talk to you every week, and we talk about the different things you do. I was just kind of checking out your new website that you put up, TomGimbel.com, and was watching a little episode. Was it with you and Hoda on NBC?
Yeah, that was a while back. Yeah, but that was about a few months back. It's been nice. We've been picked up by a lot of national stuff on career culture and how to get jobs and doing those things. So it's there's a lot of need for it in corporate America right now.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool site, too. I like the way it's put together. People, if they're interested, if they want to know what your smiling face looks like, they should check it out. TomGimbel.com, EL.com. All right, big boy. So, you know, I hate I just am one of those guys who I'm so bad at reviews, you know, when it comes time for the review, even if I, you know, think it's going to be positive or whatever, just to sit there and have a conversation about me and the job I do, it's excruciating. And so yeah. When the news is bad, it's got to be even harder for the recipient, but also for the guy or the woman who's delivering that news. How do they do it and make it effective?
Well, I think that at the get-go, the manager and the employee have to have a conversation when somebody's hired. And if you're starting now and you're learning new techniques of management, you got to have a sit-down and say, listen, I don't want it to be a once-a-year situation. I want to have meetings with you no less than once a month, preferably twice a month, that talks about the good and the bad. So nothing comes as a surprise, and nothing that's crazy is so far out there, and you're getting it on a constant feedback. So that's the number one way. The second way is you're not critiquing an overall human being. You're critiquing one aspect of what they did. So Steve is really good at A, B, and C. He's just not that good at E and F.
Oh, just say and E. I'm pretty good at F. It's just E.
Be careful. You sound like Trump all the time. So
That was not my intent. Yeah.
I think that, but that's the key. You want to be careful because sandwiching criticism is not necessarily a great strategy either, meaning start thing, then hitting the bad thing, then hitting a good thing.
Yeah.
That's not always the best way to give feedback either because the employee leaves thinking about the good thing.
And that's an interesting, right? So especially the self-centered sort of worker walks out and says, yeah, it was great because of A and C, completely forgetting about B.
Exactly. So what you got to say is this: we believe in you, and I can either not give you the feedback and let you continue in this way, or I can spend my time and the company's time to help you get better. And I hope you'll leave this meeting knowing that I want to invest to help you get better. And the really great managers then create a plan of improvement for the employee. To just tell somebody they're doing something wrong or they messed up, that's just telling that's you're talking. What? But to actually actions speak louder than words. You've got to give them a plan to improve.
You know what I like too, though, is what you say about separating the person from the work. You know, I think that's a key thing because too many times we're too tied and we think if our work is criticized, that we are being criticized as individuals, and that could be rough.
Well, and a lot of times it goes the reverse way where people say, I like the person, as a human, as
right.
a friend, but I don't like their work product. Well, on the flip side, you might like their work product and not necessarily like hanging out with them and associating with them. So you've got to find the fine line of where they fit into the culture, where they're a culture giver, not a culture taker, and then make sure that you give them feedback on how to develop, not what the problem is.
One of the other things, we've got just a minute, but one of the things you suggested, which is interesting to me, is you say as a manager, you should also talk about your own shortcomings in that meeting to sort of say, what, I don't do this that well either, I can sympathize, or how does that work?
Yeah, usually it's not the exact same problem that the person on the other end right. of the table has, but you create an analogous situation. You say, I remember a few years back when I was actually sitting down with Mary, who obviously is my boss, and she told me that I wasn't good on A and B. And I took it to heart, and I was depressed for about a day, and then I realized I'm glad that she invested that time in me, and then we worked on a plan together. And I hope you'll take that same course of action because it's been great for me and my relationship with Mary, and I'm going to have the same effect here.
All right, I'm going to consider this our review for 2016, and now I'm done. I won't have to do it again. Thanks very much for joining us, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network, and really check out his website. It is TomGimbel.com. Pretty cool. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll check up on the news headlines in the business world with Kim Gordon and Orrin Samuelson. And then when we come back after the break, we will be joined by Carol Stern, the president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. It's all coming up here on the Business Lunch. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this beautiful Friday afternoon. City of Chicago, 1236, and we're going to be maybe see 50 degrees by the time the weekend is over. In the studio, Carol Stern, the president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. Welcome to Chicago, and welcome to the Business Lunch.
Great to be here.
We have beautiful weather for you.
I appreciated that.
Yeah, no problem. Just in time for you to leave, right?
Exactly.
You know, we started the program, where I talked to Scott Kleinberger, writes about social media for the Tribune, and we have different episodes, different issues. But one of the things he brought up today was the fact that Google has come through with $1 million for UNICEF to look into the Zika virus. And I know that's a big thing for you guys.
It's great. You know, Google's one of our corporate partners. They've been a phenomenal partner. And it's really exciting when they, as a partner, recognize how important it is to get out there quick. And not only get out with a response, but they're also lending us their expertise. They're helping us to map the spread of the virus. I mean, that's a phenomenal gift.
So, you know, we talk about that in the States when there's the flu outbreak during the winter and things like that, right? Same sort of technology. They will see where the searches are, and that should help researchers know where the problem is?
That, and it also helps us to scale up the response. You know, when you can have a sense of where it's going and how fast it's going.
Sure, right.
And all of the research around the virus will actually benefit from that mapping process.
Nice. Well, we'd like to talk about technology here and how they're helping. So there's that. Speaking of technology, you're here to talk about Kid Power.
Absolutely.
Which is it just arrived in Chicago, or has it been around here before?
No, it's brand new in Chicago. Okay. As a matter of fact, we're on our fifth day of Kid Power Takes Chicago, or Chicago Takes Kid Power, depending on which of us you're talking to, I guess. Really exciting program. Program that says, you know what, 1 in 4 American kids is underactive, and 1 in 4 children around the world malnourished, severely malnourished.
Right, so you tie two things together. You get the activity for the kids, and also you sort of build some global awareness.
Absolutely. Children, there's two programs that under the rubric of Kid Power, one in the classroom, which is what's taking hold in Chicago right now, and then there's a family program. But the classroom program challenges kids, get healthy, and save a life.
All right, so tell me what's happening in Chicago. I know that several wearables were handed out to school kids.
Right, we've got 6,000 kids participating here in Chicago. They receive a wearable for good, the first wearable for good, and the first children's wearable for good.
Which a wearable is like a Fitbit or Apple Watch. Or, I mean, like, right. It's something you wear that monitors your activity.
That
and
monitors
like that.
Steps, exactly,
right,
although
right.
This is a low-cost prototype
exactly,
that
right.
UNICEF created ourselves, the U.S. Fund. We actually create a little startup right inside of U.S. Fund.
So you don't need to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to keep track of how far you walk?
No, you don't. As a matter of fact, it's pretty, you know, innovative here.
All right,
but
so the kids get the
kids
get
the
wearables,
bits, and they get them in the classroom at no charge to the children, and they are challenged to walk the minimum number of daily recommended steps. And for every 2,400 steps they walk, they get a Kid Power point. So now that's an exciting moment because right. The band lights up and it buzzes and it vibrates. And even as an adult, I have to say, it's really fun. Oh, I just got a Kid Power point.
You just got one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did a few minutes ago. It's very exciting. And then for every 10 points that the kids earn, we release a sachet of micronutrients to a starving child elsewhere in the world. So,
and the kids know that.
The kids know that. The motivation is if you get healthy, you will save a life. And we actually tested that. We did the program motivating kids to get healthy, and we had a control group, and then another control group where it was the motivation, save a life. The kids who were motivated by the program were 48% more active than the children who were motivated just to get healthy.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, okay, so they're walking to...
They're walking,
because
they're running, they're jumping.
You know, it's a more tangible result, even though they're not seeing poor kids eating. They know that, boom, when they hear that it's happening. That's easier maybe to put their hands around than it would be burning calories, I guess.
Well, it's also a thing. Kids, this is geared primarily to 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders. It's a time in life where altruism is strong. Also, the way the classroom program works, the teacher gets a tablet that's preloaded with information about kids around the world. So they're actually seeing kids around the world. They're learning about kids. And then the family program. Well, first of all, the classroom program made possible by two phenomenal sponsors.
Yeah.
Okay. Both Disney/Lucasfilms and the Star Wars campaign has been a big funder of this project. And we are their force for change. And then Target. Target's been phenomenal. I mean, they have made the bands available. available for purchase in the stores for the family program and online as well. And Target is also underwriting the cost of the program going into schools.
So the kids wear them, they take them to school, and then at school they register their steps, or how does that work?
So there's a class goal, you know, that no child is singled out. No child knows what another child has or has not done, but they swipe
their bands. Welcome to 2016.
Exactly. Yeah. They swipe their bands.
We will not compete.
But they do compete, because there is a leaderboard that tells you how much the classroom has done.
Okay.
And how you compare to classrooms in your school, and how your school compares to other classrooms in your city or across the country. And that's in the classroom program. On the family band, you get a password to a protected app, mm-hmm. and you pretty much get the same experience. You get a mission to go on, and each of our missions is hosted by a recognizable athlete or celebrity, and each mission takes the child to a different country where they learn all about it.
So 6,000 kids at schools are participating here, but if you're not one of those kids, or you're a parent of someone who's not one of those kids, can they participate as well, or how do you do that?
They can through the family program.
Okay.
Find out about that by going to unicefkidpower.org, and we'll tell you everything you need to know about how to acquire bands, etc. But I will tell you, the 6,000 kids, so 5 days, this will give you a sense of it, all right? In 5 days, these kids have walked 141,379,200 steps. That's
wow.
As if they went up and down the Willis Tower 150,000 times in 5 days.
Wow.
And they've unlocked already an amazing, 5,813 servings of micronutrients to starve
children.
Oh, that's
nice. And that's something
days.
And that's something those kids can really look at and sort of understand.
They do. You know, it's really fun. I was at the school yesterday, at Budlong School here in Chicago. You've got kids running around screaming, "I'm saving a life," you know, and they're really proud. But the other part is, the schools that we're underwriting are schools where a majority of children are on some kind of food sustenance program, whether that's free breakfast or food stamps or something. And I've got literally a carton of letters at this point from the kids and from moms telling me, my child's always been the recipient. He's
right,
never gotten
right,
to
right.
give before. And how exciting it is for these kids to give back.
What a nice feeling it must be for them
it's amazing.
To sort of return the favor.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
You spoke to the Chicago Council on Global Affairs yesterday too, right?
This morning.
Oh, it was this morning.
Yeah, this morning.
All right,
morning.
So how does the reaction of kids compare to the reaction of the adults in the room?
I think as moms and dads especially, or those of us who have any relationship to a child, it's really exciting to offer your child something that is fun, but they also do something good. I mean, one little boy who we interviewed yesterday said right into the camera, "I used to not be such a good person." You know, only a kid would say this to
right.
you. He said, "But this is making me a good person." And I think parents, and you know, when I go into the store to buy gifts for my children, you say to yourself always, every time, "They're so spoiled. I bought enough of everything."
Right, right.
Here's a chance to give your child something that's saving a life.
And that they can keep track of and see their progress.
Exactly.
All right. So tell me again then how people can get the family and,
sure.
and work out that way.
It's UNICEF Kid Power, all one word, .org. Go online. We'll tell you everything you need to know about how you can get involved. And it's bottom line, it's get healthy, save lives.
We're talking about the kids here, and I've only got a minute left, but I had hoped we could talk a little bit more about the kids there and the people
sure.
who are benefiting from it. Tell me about the programs and how the people are being fed and helped by this.
So 1 in 4 children around the world today is severely malnourished. That means they are at that point, if we don't have an intervention, either permanent damage or death. So we have learned, as the brain forms for children under the age of 5, if they are malnourished, they will be not only physically stunted, but they will also have mental incapacities that will impact
sure,
them for the rest
right.
of their life. So it's really important to get nutrition in the beginning of life. And UNICEF monitors growth month to month, week to week. When children hit that severely malnourished, the treatment is micronutrients, RUTF. It's ready-to-use therapeutic food, often in a peanut paste. It doesn't need to be refrigerated. It doesn't need to be cooked. Mom puts it on a finger, can put it on the tongue of a baby. 3 to 4 weeks of that, and a child who is severely malnourished will be brought back to health.
Wonderful. And the kids can help do that. Carol, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Steve. This was great.
Carol Stearns, the president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It's 12:52. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Dr. Emma Seppala is in the studio. She's the science director at Stanford University. She's got a new book out, pretty cool book. Check it out. It's called The Happiness Track, How to Apply the Science of Happiness to Accelerate Your Success. Emma, welcome to the Business Lunch.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
That's what we're all about. We're all about sort of working towards success. But, you know, our notion of it is, well, I mean, I think you're right that we've kind of polluted ourselves when it comes to fostering success. And the thing that jumps out at me is when we tell kids, you know, to go do your homework, don't daydream, mm-hmm. all of those things sort of incorporate very early on, maybe the wrong track. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. So we have this misconception that in order to be successful, we have to postpone or even sacrifice our happiness now. But if you look at the research, you'll see that if you are happier, if you take time off, if you connect with loved ones, if you're supportive of the people around you, you actually end up more focused, more productive, your performance improves, you're more innovative, more creative, even more charismatic and influential. And yet, many people don't know this.
But to get ahead, right, we need to take on that extra task. We need to stay a little bit longer. We need to show the boss that we're willing to work harder. Those are all the things that you're saying aren't good for us.
Well, we have this misconception that we have to constantly be pumped up on adrenaline, over-caffeinated, over-scheduled, waiting till the last minute to get things done in order to produce. But what we're actually doing is heading for burnout really fast. So 50% of people across industries are burnt out currently in the United States. 80% of doctor's visits are due to stress. Actually, if we learned to live a life that was less adrenaline focused, we'd actually get more done and manage our energy so we wouldn't all be so exhausted by the end of the day.
All right, so who leads that then? Do employers lead that movement or do employees lead that movement?
In many ways, leaders need to lead the way as well. And a lot of managers, CEOs believe that creating material perks, bonuses, work from home days, ping pong tables are going to somehow lead to happier workplaces. But if you look at the data, and this is what I discuss in the happiness track, is that happy employees are happy because of positive relationships, positive social relationships.
I'm so glad you brought that up. We were talking earlier today with Scott Kleinberg. He writes about social media for the Tribune and a survey out of workers at Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I think it was 86% of them are happy at their workplace. And mm-hmm. we started talking about those things, the ping pong tables and the food and the beer and all of that. And I said, no matter how many physical things you have, you start to naturally sort of take them for granted.
Absolutely.
I don't even mean that in a negative way, but it becomes your
norm.
Equilibrium, your norm. So there's got to be something more than those physical things that make you happy at work.
Absolutely. It's a psychological concept called habituation. We get used to what we have, and then it doesn't make us happy anymore. But what we know leads to lasting feelings of fulfillment, as well as making you more influential, charismatic, and so forth, is positive social relationships characterized by supportive, empathic relationships, something we don't usually think of at work. Yet, those workplaces that are characterized by those kind of positive relationships and positive culture end up doing better and having more engaged employees, more loyal employees, and with a better bottom line.
You write about self-compassion and the importance for that. And I think that's got to be one of the most difficult parts to sort of to exercise that. Mm-hmm. How do people do that?
Well, we falsely believe that self-criticism leads to self-improvement. Actually, it's the equivalent of self-sabotage. If you treat yourself like that, you actually end up more anxious, more depressed, and less likely to learn from failures and mistakes. On the other hand, if you're able to treat yourself with self-compassion, sounds soft, but there's a lot of hard data to back it up.
right.
That means to treat yourself like a friend, you actually do better.
Well, you come from Stanford, right? So this is science-based.
My entire book, The Happiness Track, is completely backed up by data.
And what's the reception? How's it been out there?
It's been awesome. I just spoke at Google, and it was standing room only. And Google is really a group of high-achieving individuals.
Have chairs, Emma? They did have chairs, right?
They had chairs.
Yeah, okay.
But the room was just packed, and there was very high levels of stress and some very sincere questions about how can I be successful but also happy? How can my kids be successful but also happy?
Is this new, or is this just a sort of a repackaging of something we probably should have known? You understand my question?
I understand your question. Absolutely. Yeah. It is new in the sense that we have this theory that we need to suffer in order to do well. And I'll tell you a quick story. A Stanford student came up to us after a class we were teaching on happiness and said, you know, this goes against everything I've ever learned, because my parents told me that in order to be successful, I need to suffer.
Right, right. And here we are sitting on Michigan Avenue in the Allstate studio with a beautiful window on Michigan Avenue. So we're just going to daydream for a while, foster our creativity. Emma Seppala is the writer of the book, The Happiness Track, How to Apply the Science of Happiness to Accelerate Your Success. Great to meet you. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.